Well, it is a joy to be with you again tonight. I appreciate David's remarks about being able to come here. I concur with that a great deal. I have a very fortunate opportunity to not only preach locally with the church and among people that I love dearly, but to occasionally go out to places apart from where I locally preach, like Capshaw, and get to meet people, and get to talk about things that are the most important things in all of our lives, and get to do it among people that really care about what I have to say from God's Word. And so just getting to do that is a special privilege for me, and I appreciate the fact that you've chosen to come. There are guests with us tonight, some who are good friends of ours, and we appreciate so much you being here, and certainly all of you being here. Tomorrow night, I want to preach a lesson that I have entitled 10 Commandments for Young People. Of course, I use that 10 Commandments accommodatively. But if there are young people that you know of that you can invite to come, I would ask you to do that. It is a lesson that I try to preach in meetings, especially for young people, and I hope to provide some things and some biblical admonitions that would be helpful, especially to them. I have spent a good portion of my life working and trying to help younger people, and that has meant much to me personally. And as a result of some of that and a result of some observations, then I have kind of put together a list of 10 things, and sometimes those things change, but they're things that I think will be helpful. And so that's what I want to preach on tomorrow night. And then as we close Friday night, I want to preach on taking up your cross daily and how important that is. And maybe look at some things that Jesus meant by that when he encouraged us to do that. But thank you again for coming. And if you can, we'd love to see you either Thursday or Friday night as well. In my preaching experience, lessons that I have preached about the home and things that relate to home have resonated with people. Not because I have preached them, but because home resonates with people. And when things at home are not what they ought to be, that's a difficulty for all of us, because it is these familial relationships that mean so much to us. And for me personally, being a good husband and a father, a good father, is critically important. And I am keenly aware of my inabilities and the mistakes that I've made. Not all the mistakes. I'm very aware that there are mistakes that I have made that I'm probably not aware of. But as a result of that, it has caused me to look at what I have done with pause and to, in some ways, determine that I don't like it. And because of that, it has been somewhat discouraging. Yet, what I understand parenting and being a husband to be and dealing with these relationships is always a work in progress. Of all of the things that I have ever done, I think that being a parent is the most difficult. It is the most challenging as well. Beth and I have three children. We kind of have four children now. Our youngest son married, and a lot of you know her. Her mother's here tonight. I had to say that. And her sister's here, so I had to say that. But we love Aubrey. And so, in a very real sense, we have four children. And they're all gone. And yet, at night, most of the time at night, when things get a bit quiet, and of course in our house now, because they're gone, things are quiet most all the time, unless the dog's barking. But we discuss our children quite often. And we talk about them. I think that's the best way to say that in a good sense. And all of you who have children understand what I'm about to say, but you love your children differently than you love anybody else. You want for your children what is best. You always do. And so, let me address just the children for just a moment tonight who are in this audience who are children. And let me say to you that your parents love you more than anybody else on this earth. And they always have your best interest at heart, always. And so you need to help them be good parents. You need to understand the angle at which they come to you and try to help you and encourage you. And children bring the greatest feelings of exuberance and frustration. It's a mixed bag, and all of us who are parents, we understand that. Parents feel the need to provide for their children, and that's as it should be. Yet today in our world, there are many parents that neglect their children in various ways. They, in essence, abuse their children. We understand what it means to abuse children. And we hear news reports on a daily basis about children who have been abused at various ages. And I don't know that there's anything that makes me more upset personally than to hear of a child that has been abused or someone who does not have the ability to care for themselves, that where abuse takes place. And that's as it should be. But I want to suggest at the beginning of this lesson tonight that the greatest abuse, the greatest neglect that we can give our children is to neglect them spiritually. I've seen it and you have seen it. I have seen various people throughout my lifetime who have basically neglected their children spiritually. And if their heart is what it ought to be, then at some point in time they come to understand that that's something that they should not have done. I preached a lesson years ago at the South Jacksonville Church in Jacksonville, Florida. And I remember very well that particular lesson. I remember that night. And about 3 weeks after I had preached that lesson, I got a letter from a man. This was back, anybody, y'all remember what a letter is? Had a stamp on it, went through the post office, that kind of thing. It actually was a letter. It said, "Dear Kenny," when I opened it up. I thought that was interesting. He said, "I don't know if you remember me," but he said, "I was at the meeting at South Jacksonville. I'm a member of South Jacksonville." And he said, "I want to tell you what has transpired over the past 3 months. And I'm giving you the gist of the letter." He said, "I have not been what I should have been as a father to my children spiritually." And he said, "Some things or something that you had said in that sermon kind of stirred my mind to think about that," which that's exactly what we hope our preaching does. Anytime we stand before a group of people, it generally stirs us first. That's the nature of preaching. It always, we always address what we need. I have found that to be the case, at least for me. But this gentleman said, after listening to that, I decided that I was going to do something. He said, "And I want to tell you what I did." He said, I bought a ticket to Portland, Oregon. I flew to Portland, Oregon, and I made it such that I would go and I would return 6 hours later. He said, "I want to tell you what transpired." He said, "My son and daughter-in-law were not very spiritually minded." And he said, "That was primarily, in my mind, a result of my neglect." And he said, "What I decided to do was to go up there and talk to my son." He said, "So I called my daughter-in-law and asked her to not tell my son that I was coming, but that I was coming, and to make sure that his schedule would allow him to see me while I was there." So the daughter-in-law, he did not tell the daughter-in-law what he was coming for, but it had been 6 years since he'd seen his son. And he said, "So I flew up and I went to his house. And of course, he was in shock that I was there. But he said, I asked him if I could come in. And of course, he welcomed me in. And he said, I just want to talk to you for a few hours. And so he said, he and I went into a room and we had a good discussion. And I apologized to him for what I had done and for what I had not done. And he said, I'm writing you to tell you that I received a phone call from him. And he said, Dad, I really do appreciate you coming. And I want you to know that I've talked to my wife. I don't remember exactly what her name was, but he said, we have decided that we're going to do better. And what you've said is right. I tell you that story for a couple of reasons. First of all, to give you hope. That if a child isn't what that child ought to be, that there's always hope. And we must never neglect opportunities to help with that to whatever degree we can. And to say that sometimes people respond. And we're not going to do things always like we should. I don't think there's any parent alive who has always done for their children everything that they should have done. But I do know that this kind of neglect is pretty common among a lot of people. It's ironic that many parents try and give their children everything except the very thing that they need. And so I want to talk to you tonight about the thing that I think our children need the most. And I've entitled the lesson, The Greatest Gift for My Children. Not a gift, not something that I can give them, but what I think is the greatest gift that I can give my children. I want you to take your Bibles, if you would, and turn to 2 Timothy, the first chapter. Basically tonight, we're just going to look at three particular passages. I just want to make some observations and some comments about that. And then I'll leave it to that. And I'll let the lesson do with the lesson whatever you choose. But I want you to consider these things that we look at tonight. 2 Timothy, the first chapter. I want to make an observation before we look at a few verses from 2 Timothy. And this is the observation. As I read first the letter of 1 Timothy and the letter of 2 Timothy, it seems to me that there is a different tone in the second letter than there is the first letter. Now, tone's hard to understand because you don't know the tone, but the words indicate a certain meaning, it seems to me. And I think even in the first chapter of 2 Timothy, it seems to me that the tone of Paul is different than it is in the first letter. And I want you, as I begin to read, I want you to just think about the idea of the tone and think about if this sounds a little different to you. I'm just going to read down through verse 7, beginning in verse 3, where Paul would say this to Timothy, I thank God, whom I serve with a pure conscience, as my forefathers did, as without ceasing I remember you in my prayers night and day. Greatly desiring to see you, being mindful of your tears, that I may be filled with joy when I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice. And I'm also persuaded is in you also. Therefore I remind you to stir up the gift of God which is in you through the laying on of my hands. For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Now those short verses probably don't indicate as obviously the thing that I'd like for you to see as if we were to read on. But I want you to think about just in these few verses and the verses shortly after that, the tone of this letter seems to be different. Paul says to Timothy, I want you to stir up the gift. I want you to, in essence, not be timid. I don't want you to be ashamed. I want you to share with me in the sufferings. And then later he was saying, I want you to hold fast the pattern of sound words. Do those things sound like something that Paul would have had to say to Timothy? Someone who Paul would later say is really like a son to me in the faith. I mean, this young man, as we're going to see in a few minutes from the book of Acts, this young man was a man that he handpicked, he hand-selected, and yet later in his life, he writes a letter to Timothy, the last letter that we have, as far as we know. And in this letter, he's asking Timothy to stir up the gift and to don't be timid and don't be ashamed and hold fast the pattern of sound words. Does that sound like something Paul would have had to say to Timothy? And I want to suggest to you tonight that at least it seems to me that Timothy may have been going through a difficult time. I'm not suggesting that he had lost his faith, but I am suggesting that at least to me the tenor of the entire letter sounds a little bit different. And he's encouraging Timothy to not become discouraged. And I will tell you that sometimes as an evangelist, we get discouraged. And we need to be reminded, as Paul says to Timothy, that he does, verse 6, therefore I remind you to stir up the gift. He was trying to encourage him. And what Paul did here is he calls to remembrance the faith of Timothy's grandmother Lois and his mother Eunice. And he does that by the following. In verse 5 says, I am persuaded that this is in you also. He's referring to this genuine faith. So he's telling his son in the faith, Timothy, that he wants to remind him of the genuine faith that he remembers in his mother and in his grandmother. Now, let's go to the second passage. Look at Acts the 16th chapter. Acts 16, as Paul begins, he's just really left on his second missionary journey, and he comes to Derbe and Lystra. Verse 1 of Acts 16 says, and it says there, then they were introduced to Timothy. And now it says, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a certain Jewish woman who believed, but his father was Greek. And he was well spoken of by the brethren who were at Lystra and Iconium. Now, that just adds a little bit more to what I originally said. Here's a young man that is, this passage says, is well spoken of by the brethren. Let me just, as a side note, let me ask you young people especially who are here tonight. What do people think about you? I'm not talking about what do people think about you generally. I'm saying spiritually, what is it that people think about you? If I were to just point to someone and say, now, what do you think about a certain person, a certain young person? How would you answer that? And how, young people, what do you think people would say about you? I am encouraged by this because Paul goes into this area and he's looking for someone to help him and he spots Timothy and he's thinking about what's going on. He's thinking about Timothy's background and he in essence asks Timothy, he chooses Timothy. And part of why he chooses him is because he is well spoken of by the brethren. Somebody says, well, it's not that big a deal what people think about you. Yes, it is. I'm not saying it's as important as character, which is exactly who you are, but what people think about you is critically and vitally important. And Timothy had established a reputation among these people by which he was well spoken of by the brethren. Paul evidently saw that and he chose Timothy. He wanted Timothy to go on with him. And you know what happened to him as a result of this? Timothy would go with Paul. He would go on with Paul. Verse 1 says that Timothy was the son of a certain Jewish woman who believed. Can you imagine in the first century a woman married, but yet she is identified as a believer? Her husband was not. But she was a believer. And evidently we find out from what is said in 2 Timothy 1 that the grandmother was a believer in will. And there was strong influence that was given. Paul knew that these people possessed genuine faith. We really don't know much about how they came to have that faith. We speculate, and I think it becomes pretty clear that as these churches were established, probably on the first journey, probably as Paul had come through, and as they had taught and people began to obey, probably Timothy's mother and his grandmother had obeyed the gospel. But how difficult a situation would that have been? Here is a woman whose husband, I don't know if he was interested in spiritual things, but he wasn't a believer. She is signified as a believer, and yet she obeys. Not only does she obey, but she has influence over her son. She has evidently, or the other, influence over her mother. And there's great faith that is expressed here. And again, we don't know how this came about, but we knew, though, that she handed it down to Timothy. Somehow, Timothy was able to receive this. Now, look back in 2 Timothy. I want to go back to 2 Timothy 3. There are a lot of things that I could say about these passages that we're not talking about, but I'm talking to you not specifically to make just one point, or one primary point about all of this. In 2 Timothy 3, again, this is back to this letter which Paul wrote to Timothy. This gives us some insight as to how all this transpired. Look at 2 Timothy 3, beginning in verse 14. Paul would say, "But you must continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of, knowing from whom you have learned them, and that from childhood you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise for salvation through faith, which is in Christ Jesus." Now, may I just ask you, as we read these verses, to think about tone again? He says, "But you must continue in the things which you have learned and been assured of." Now, I will tell you that there are some things prior to these statements that he makes in chapter 3 that would tend to help us understand that Timothy is facing some challenges as an evangelist. All evangelists do. But again, we're talking about Timothy. And yet what Paul says is that you must continue in the things which you have learned. I want you to think about just a few statements that are made here, a few of these words. He says, continue in the things that you have learned and been assured of from childhood. Now, I don't want to read too much into this. And if you think, well, Kenny, you're reading too much into it, please tell me. But I think there is a progression here. I think what Paul is saying to Timothy is, I want you to continue in these things. What things are that? They are things that you have learned and things that you have been assured of. Now, may I suggest to us tonight that there's a difference between what you've learned and what you've been assured of. There's not a difference in what it is. There's a difference in how it's approached. And to me, this is one of the things I think that help us understand what they were doing, what his mother and his grandmother were probably doing. They were learning things. You know, when you have young children, when they go to Bible class, when you're teaching them, what are you teaching them? You're teaching them the facts. You're telling them these great Bible stories. And not only are you telling them one time, you're telling them over and over and over again, because that's the information you want them to get. But there comes a point in time where you're not just telling the information, you're helping them understand that I'm telling you this for this reason. This is not just information to help you pass a test or to help you know more Bible than anybody else in your class. This is information I'm trying to help you learn so that ultimately your faith is something that you can be assured of, so that you can continue in that faith. And I think there is a progression here that is pretty obvious. In verse 14, the latter part of it says, knowing from whom you have learned them. Who did Timothy learn it from? Well, he learned it, I think, from his mother and from his grandmother. Well, again, there are other things that we can, I think, state about that. But I just want to make a few observations. And let me say this, I think the key to what we give our children is genuine faith. And that's the first observation that I want to make. We must give our children, when I say give, you understand that we can't give it to them like we give them a gift. We can't do that. But what we have to try and do is we must establish in our own lives that our faith is genuine and real. I want to ask you what I believe. For a parent, is the most sobering question you could ever be asked. If your children, let me rephrase that. Would you be okay with your children having the faith that you have when they become your age? You follow that? Will you approve of your children having your faith when they become your age? And I must add to that, you ought to be. If you say, you know what, I don't really think I want that. Well, you're indicting yourself. I mean, the very quick response to that, it seems to me, is sure, that's what I'd like them to have. I want them to see a genuine, real faith in me. And what I think Timothy saw in his mother and his grandmother was, it wasn't just a profession and a confession that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. It was a statement that said, not only is He the Lord of my life, I'm going to prove that He's the Lord of my life every day. Which brings me to my second observation, and that is that faith must be lived daily. There's a lot of things we can say about what it is that we need to do to help our children, but I'm going to just establish these few principles. We need to live our faith daily. And I'm going to say this to you. Too many Christians live their faith. They try to live their faith on Sunday. And Sundays and Wednesday nights, and they spend a few hours in an assembly like this, in a building like this, doing things over and over and over again, which are good to do, which help us. But I will tell all of us who are parents, if we think for 1 minute that what faith is what we do in this building, in this type of assembly, we have no idea what faith is. What we do in here is important. It is critically important. It is a foundation. It helps with the building of foundation. But in my experience, and talking to many young people, and I've talked to many, not talked to as many as others have, but it is a frequent question that I get when young people look at me and they say, there's got to be more to faith than what my parents have done. Doesn't that indict us, if that's us? They're looking, many young people who are raised in homes like hopefully all of ours are, many of them are looking even at us and they're saying, is that all faith is? Is it just where the function and the primary focus is, the attention that's put on the assembly? And I'm not dismissing or lessening in any kind of way what happens in the assembly. That's as clear that we need to assemble and we need to do the things that we're doing, like we talked about Sunday. We need to do those things, and I'm all for that. But folks, if that's the essence of our faith, we have missed it. Our children are watching. And our children are watching to see if our faith is practiced. It's easy to be a Christian in this building. You know, coming together, and again, back to what David said, you know, it's a thrill for me and for him and for all of us together on a Wednesday night and a Tuesday night and a Monday night occasion when we have special services like we're having this week. Yes, that's a thrill. But if that's the essence of who we are, I think we've lost what we ought to find. And that is a commitment to the Lord and living as He would have us to live on a daily basis, or as we'll talk about tonight, taking up our cross daily. Well, how does that happen? How do we establish this? Turn over to Deuteronomy 6, a passage that probably any time you're talking about parental responsibility, a passage that probably is brought up 95% of the time. And I understand why. But in Deuteronomy 6, beginning in verse 4, I mentioned this in Sunday morning's lesson when we were talking about loving God with all of your heart. Verse 4 of Deuteronomy 6 says, Moses is speaking the words of the Lord, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. Now I want you to get that. He is establishing some parameters and some points of reference for parents to do what it is that they're to do to help their children have this kind of love, have this kind of dedication to the Lord. And the last part of verse 6 tells us exactly what the key is. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. That's in your heart. He's not saying shall be in your children's heart. At least he's not saying that yet. He said the first thing he says, they shall be in your heart. You've got to establish that in your heart. So the very first thing you have to do is have this kind of faith. Have this kind of commitment. Have this kind of passion for living like God wants you to live. Then he gets to verse 7 and he says this, Then you shall teach them diligently to your children. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, when you lie down and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. Have you written them on your frontlets? Your doorpost? Got all that done? Well, what's the point? You said, Kenny, what's the point that you're getting? Here's the point that I'm getting at. What God wants from those of us who are parents is He wants us to live by a genuine, day-to-day, practical faith that shows our children this is what being a Christian is. And that's really the only point that I want to make tonight, and here's why I want to make that point. There are too many Christians who aren't doing that. They're getting them to a church service a few times a week, and again, I'm all for that. But when it comes to what happens when we leave this building, we're not practicing, in essence, what we're preaching. And our children see through that. So what God said through Moses to the children of Israel is what you need to do is you need to make sure you're doing what you ought to do. And once you establish that, then you need to teach that to your children. You need to show them and teach them. Now, the practical question comes, how you do that? And may I say this to all of us? I think that the Lord leaves that to us. I think that He leaves that to a parent to figure out. I don't think He's leaving to the parent, you just tell them whatever you want to tell them, you just show them whatever you want to tell them. But I think He's saying to parents, you have to establish that. You have to determine what that is. But it involves your life and it involves the life of your children. And those children are different. We all know our children are different, don't we? So how do I approach? How do I teach? How do I get my children to have this kind of genuine faith? I want to just mention one example, and the lesson will be yours. When I say years ago, I really mean years ago. When I was probably, I'd say 25, 26 years old. I was traveling, doing a lot of traveling, and I was passed through Dothan, Alabama one night. I'd stopped and was staying with some people that some of you probably know, John and Becky Haley. And I was there specifically to see their oldest son. Talked to him about some college plans, and I'd spending the night there. So as John and Becky typically would do with me, they would say, Kenny, we want you to come. We want you to stay all night with us. You don't need to be in any rush to get up the next day. And of course, I loved it. I loved them, and I loved being around them, loved them and their kids. And so I kind of made that, you know, 24-hour deal, and I'd stayed around for a while. And so the next morning, after we'd been up for a little while that night, the next morning about 6 o'clock, I heard Becky come through the loudspeaker and say, it's time to get up. Devotion's going to be in about 6-7 minutes. And John was sleeping here in a single bed, and I was sleeping here in a single bed, and my face was against the wall. And I had my watch on, and I heard her say, devotion's going to be in about 5 or 6 minutes. I looked at my watch, and it said 6 o'clock. And I said to myself, I'll just play like I'm asleep. So I just was calm. I just stayed there in a few minutes, a couple of minutes. She said, hurry down. We're getting ready to start. And by this time, John was up. And he reached over and kind of pushed on me, you know, and I kind of acted like I just woke up, you know, and I said, hey, what's going on? You know, I was already awake. I knew what was going on. He said, we got devotions. And I thought, well, you know, I'm awake now. I got to go. I know that's a bad attitude, but I was tired, you understand, and really wasn't my house, but I said, well, I got to get up and I'm going to go. So I went down there, and all four of those children were down there. They were having a devotion. And John was conducting that. And Becky stopped what she was doing. And about 6:15, I could tell you right now, none of them were real happy about it. But they were all there. And the reason that I remember is because the discussion that morning was Acts 16 and the story of Timothy. And he was talking to his children about the kind of people that they ought to be. And he spent it wasn't long. It was we didn't sing or anything. Man, if we'd have sung, it would have been bad, I'm sure. But John just made it. He just made a simple point, and they had a prayer. And the kids went back up and got ready for school. And Becky was fixing breakfast, and John was getting ready for work. And I just sat there thinking, I sure am tired, but that sure was good. And I thought to myself through the years, that was a wonderful way. That was John's way of making an impression on his kids. In my study of the Bible, I've never seen anything that said you've got to get your kids up at 6 o'clock and have a devotion. But what I do read is when Moses would say, you shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house. You will walk when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand. They shall be as frontlets between your eyes, and you shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. What those verses say to me is you need to be people of genuine faith. It needs to mean something to you. And not only does it need to mean something to you, it needs to be expressed in the way that you live your life. Your children need to see it. They need to hear about it. And what they need to get when they leave your house is the fact that of all of the things that my parents are engaged in, of all the things which they provided me, what I remember the most and what I value the greatest is the faith which was lived in their lives. My dad is 83. And my mother is 80. They live in a small town in Arkansas. They've lived there for 60 years. My dad has preached in every small congregation in 3 or 4 counties, plus teaching school for 30 years. My mother has been an elementary school secretary in a small school in a small town. And while I have not had some of the luxuries and some of the toys and some of the things that other kids in my town had at that time, I am most grateful that what I believe my parents have given me is genuine faith. And folks, as a parent, that's what we need to make our aim and our goal. And we need to do our dead level best that that's what we're showing them. I know it's hard. I know it takes sacrifice and it takes time and it takes effort and it takes all of those things that anything like that's going to take. But it is what God wants us to show our children. And I realize there are a lot of other things that we can talk about. There are some specific things probably that we could talk about. But I want to leave you tonight just with a thought that what you need to make sure you're doing is you need to make sure that your faith is genuine and that what you see, what your children see in you is that genuine faith. May God help us toward that end. If you have a spiritual need that we can help you with, we'd love to do that. If you'd come to the front and make that known, as together we stand and as we sing.